Hey, are you ready for an AEW Dynamite review? Well, that's what you're going to get. That's what we're doing right now here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show podcast. Hello, I'm Mr. Warren Hayes. Why am I being so aggressive? Why am I so primed? It's a nice Thursday morning. It's May 9th, 2024. We're having a nice little time. We're chilling out. Why am I like this? There's no reason. I'm not particularly upset. I'm not particularly, in a good mood. I'm very, just very chill. It's like, hey, how's things going, pals? Kind of thing. I don't know. Why am I so upset? It's not the episode of Dynamite that made me upset. It didn't make me upset. It didn't make me go cuckoo bonkers either. I've got some reservations about it. I thought it was a better episode than what we got last week, which just was completely weird, some terribly weird vibes and a bizarre live audience on top of that. It was not one of my favorite episodes, but I think this week was a step up. I think there's some good things that came out of all of this, but and we had one awesome match, which, excuses a lot, but I have to mention it. I'm trying to say too many things at once, and I'm also trying to come to grips with some things. There's only so much that you can expect, I guess, out of Major League Pro Wrestling. And I'm not talking about MLW. I'm talking there's only so much you can expect out of Major League Pro Wrestling before it starts. Before it starts acting like the other promotion, right? Acting like the market leader. As much as I would like to sit here and tell you, pro wrestling, AEW has cracked the code and they found a way to present pro wrestling in a completely different manner, in something that we're not accustomed to. It's not the case. And I think we have to come to grips with this, that moving forward, there will be more and more, more and more segments and parts of AEW that are going to look like WWE because one wrestling promotion over two decades stood alone and showed North Americans that this is the only way to do pro wrestling. This is the only way to present pro wrestling. And a lot of people grew up with that, and a lot of people in the business grew up with that, and fans grew up with that, and it's the only way they know how. So if you see segments where you have someone arriving at the arena with a camera on them and whoop, they bump into an interview person, and that reminds you of WWE, well, that's exactly that's the thing, right? We're going to just be seeing more and more of that. And all these little production elements and little things that they add in that resemble what WWE do, I can't really blame them. And we keep talking about, and here I'm talking about, this is how WWE does it. And there's a lot of cues they take from WWE, don't get me wrong, but no one has cracked the code for over 30, 35 years at this point on how to present pro wrestling as a package differently, right? Not Nitro started doing it one way, and we've been doing it the same since. No one has figured out an alternative way to present pro wrestling in a different manner all throughout the years, while keeping it feel professional, look and feel like a professional outfit. I don't know. Look, clearly I'm bummed by some production issues, creative decisions that were made over the course of the show, where I'm like, the swerve throwing to the Tony Tron. You can't get more WWE than that. Like, that's the most tropey WWE thing. Check it out. Guys in the back, pull that up. You know, like, I'm like, but if there's one thing that I'm already rambling and I'm already way off what we should be doing here right now, but it is pertinent to the conversation. It is pertinent to how I felt about last night's Dynamite. If there's one thing that wrestling fans have shown, and it's not necessarily a recent thing, but I think it's been amplified because of this tribal war that exists, because of how public Twitter is. You know, we're not just all scrolled away on our message boards anymore or on RSPW. You know, now it's become much more amplified because anyone can jump into this conversation, right? I think we've shown that wrestling fans are not people who like change. They like their ice cream served a certain way. Maybe they'll like different flavors. You know, if we're using the ice cream analogies again. How you doing, Max? We like our ice cream served certain. We like trying out different flavors. We'll have our favorite types of flavors, but we're very iffy on having it served to us in a different way. Do we, you know, if you like your ice cream in a, you know, as a parfait, like in a cup with some hot fudge, you know, and a cherry, well, that's probably how you're going to order it all the time, right? And if someone says, hey, how about, you know, soft serve dipped in a chocolate shell? And you go, no. And wrestling fans are like that. Yeah, they don't like change. They don't like things being different. Everything sort of has to be homogenized into one thing. And I think that, I think there's a, you know, there are things about pro wrestling that make it naturally pro wrestling that are difficult to change, even though there, you know, Vince struggled to have so many things change about pro wrestling over the years. There are certain things that inevitably remain true and remain real. And there are things that you can be stalwart on, I think. But there's a difference between accepting change and just and being completely resistant to it as well. There's a difference between not even accepting change, wanting everything to be different, which is not necessarily what I want. But and just things remaining completely the same and rigid and you know, I only know things this one way, so. And I'm very pro change when the things make sense, when it's good, when it's interesting, and especially when it makes something feel different from the other brand. You know, if you know, listen, Fruity Pebbles, we're talking cereal now. Fruity Pebbles was released because Fruit Loops, right? because they're like, you know, these fruity cereals. Fruit Loops was out there, you know, doing gangbusters for Kellogg's, and then Post cereal is like, hey, I'm gonna put out my own cereal here, and the mascots are gonna be beloved 1960s comedy icon Fred Flintstone. Which is a decision in about itself when you're catering to kids growing up in the 80s, but listen. That's a whole other discussion for a whole other time. They didn't outright just do Fruit Loops. They did the little fucking, you know, Rice Krispies. They did the little colored Rice Krispies with the fruit flavors, right? And you're like, oh, this is just different enough. Different, you know, fun little, another experience going on, so on and so forth. I was still privy to Fruit Loops, but then I have a choice. I ultimately had a choice to say, this is what I prefer. And maybe I'm going off track too much here. But someone told me one time that when it comes to capitalism in the market, right? Capitalism, when you start getting really big, and you're competing against other similar products, competition makes everything the same. And you just have to look at how social media developed in the 2010s, when early on Facebook had its identity. You know, it was the place where you'd go and you post pictures, and you'd post pictures, and you have long form posts and all of that. And Twitter had its own identity, you know, it's 144 characters, 140, I think it was 140, right? Just small little text snippets, and it was a little complicated if you wanted to add video, not even video, but images. But that wasn't the point. It was about discussions. It was, you quote tweet and all of that. But as things progressed, everything just started looking the same. And the layout of, not a lot of people, I think, remember the layout of the original Twitter page versus Facebook. Now everything looks like Facebook. You know, so everything ended up looking like Facebook. You know, it's the same thing now they're doing, you know, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, they're all, Instagram, they're all doing TikTok shorts, you know. Everything, competition makes everything the same. And I'm steadfast in maintaining that AEW is still a product that speaks more to me, but the things that I found really made it unique, and which are basically week after week great pro wrestling matches, are becoming less and less of a thing because for whatever reasons, but we are focusing more on those godforsaken stories that everyone says they want more and more. And it might not be as brute force as it was with the Brochachos, which was such a complete shift in tone that it was earth-shaking. That here the changes, the implementations, I find are so granular, so little, so small, that it doesn't jar you as much. It doesn't get to you. It doesn't strike you as much. But I feel like as we go along, you know, Dynamite might turn into something closer to what the people online have been craving, or so I'm told. What all the people who, you know, who never watch AEW but complain that AEW has no stories, yeah, we're going to give them more stories. And then the goalposts are going to change again. And we've talked about this before. We've talked about this during the Brochacho stuff. The goalposts are just going to move. Even if AEW becomes a perfect clone of Monday Night. Let's say Dynamite becomes a perfect clone of Monday Night Raw. And I mean like, you know, carbon copy, same type of pacing, same type of production value, same bloodline thing, like everything that people love about Raw these days. Let's say AEW adopts it all flawlessly. They will still find a way. They being the detractors, the complainers, the people who complain most about AEW are the people who don't watch it. They're just going to find something else to dislike. They're just, you know, there's always going to be something about AEW that is going to bug them because of some weirdo loyalty to another company, which is baffling to me, which I think is very weird. I don't know why anyone would identify themselves to a company. You can enjoy a company's product, you know, but I don't know why you'd latch onto it unless you truly have interest in it. But that, again, that's a whole other thing. I feel like I rambled quite a bit. I don't know. Hopefully, that all kind of came together, first and foremost. Because I promise, I did not plan on starting the first 17 minutes of the review off with that. But nonetheless, like, you know, it's how I feel AEW has been. I'm not depressed. I'm not down. I'm not, you know, slamming the table. I'm not going, you know, like we're not in the midst of mid 2023 AEW, which I still think was a down point, a creative low mark in the history of the company. But I don't feel the vibe that AEW had at the start of 2024, excuse me, coming off the Continental Classic, building to Revolution, and then getting Revolution. I don't feel that vibe that you know, when we were right in the midst of restore the feeling vibe. There we go. That's what I was looking for. When we were right in the middle of the restore the feeling vibe, I don't feel that right now. What I feel is still good. And like I said, we're going to go through the card and there's some stuff I really liked here. There's some stuff I really, really, really liked. But, and there's some angles which I think are very good as well. Look, I just feel things are a little askew because, and it's not as much the angles, but like the feeling. It's weird. Again, the better show than last week. Last week, the vibes were really off. They were very, very strange. I'm not saying it's on that level this week. I'm just observing things again this week where I'm like, man, where's my alternative? You know what I mean? Like, where's my true to form alternative? You know, like if WWE is Motley Crue, I'm not looking for Warrant. I'm looking for the Ramones. I'm looking for the Pixies. I'm looking for Husker Du. You know, that's always what I mean by alternative, you know, something good, something that you can, that you can wrap your head around, that you're like, yeah, this is great, but it is different, but doesn't trade off on quality, on excellence, on, you know, All right, I've talked about it enough. I think you get what I mean. Edmonton, Alberta, Canada is the place that hosted this edition of Dynamite, the May 8th edition from Rogers Place. 4,096 tickets distributed as I'm recording this. Of course, according to WrestleTix, 5,746 tickets were distributed the last time Dynamite was there in May 2023. So a little bit of a substantial drop, but you know, we're 4,096. That's pretty good for Dynamite these days. That's pretty good. The show starts off with Adam Copeland. See, that's Adam Copeland walking into the arena, bumps into an interview person. And I'm like, oh boy, is this how... don't get me wrong. I understand why you put Cope, you know, in there to begin with. You know, I think... I think Tony believes a lot in Adam Copeland as a guy who is beloved, recognizable by WWE fans, and like, oh, maybe we'll be able to hang on to this. I don't know. I know, you know, Copeland's been doing fantastic work. I get it. I get why he does this, you know. He says tonight, well, he's fighting Brody King, and he's going to make the match no disqualification. And there you go. So it wasn't a mystery opponent tonight. We already knew as Cope was coming in. We already knew as all of this came down that it was going to be Brody King. They weren't going to do the gimmick that they did last week where they were going to wait to announce who was going to be there. Who was going to be the surprise opponent is what I'm trying to say. And turned out to be Buddy Murphy. Now we can all assume, anyone with two eyes knows where this is going. Malakai Black versus Adam Copeland at the pay-per-view, at Double or Nothing. Again, this makes perfect sense. No one was expecting Malakai Black. I don't think anyone was expecting Malakai Black to be the guy tonight, but... You know, you still got Brody here. It was going to be Brody, but they didn't look. The point is that a couple of weeks ago, House of Black said, you'll never know who you're going to fight. It's going to be one of us. It'll be a gauntlet type of thing. And Copeland's like, bring him on. And tonight it's like, yeah, well, we're letting you know a full 2 hours ahead of time. Oh. Again, I understand why you do that. I think there's a higher level of interest in an Adam Copeland Brody King match, because I really do think Brody King is a beloved superstar in the eyes of AEW fans. Excuse me. Anyway, Orange Cassidy defeated Trent Beretta in the opener. I thought this was a fun little match. Starts off fast, of course, as it should. You know, both guys apparently don't like each other, so we didn't start with a collar and elbow lockup. You know, the signature grudge match opening move that they do over on NXT. You don't know what I'm talking about. You just have to watch the last couple of pay-per-views where they set everything up as a grudge match. And then the first move... that they do is a collar and elbow. Anyway, Orange Cassidy early on has a tremendous dive on Trent. And you're like, okay, like this is, you know, you feel like it's hitting another gear already, that we're going hard on this because these two guys don't like each other. They're feuding. It's a blood feud on top of that. So there's a little something going in there, but I don't feel like it was maintained throughout the entire match. Of course, there was a picture in picture during this, which always slows things down, right? Because, you know, then it's usually a heat segment. And it's usually a heat segment. Things get slowed down until we get back from commercial. But despite that, as good as the start was, I felt like we were going to go boom, 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 boom. But we kind of went boom, 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 boom. We didn't quite reach the top, the pinnacle. Don Callis shows up here as well during the match. There's an orange punch by Cassidy, but he ate a knee. See, Trent delivers a flying knee, and Orange Cassidy fighting spirits up and lands an orange punch, but he collapses because, you know, he was in adrenaline mode, so no one can cover, no one can capitalize here. They trade strikes, they know each other's moves, so they counter out of each other's moves. Half and half by Trent, followed by two pile drivers and the running knee strike. Trent removes the turnbuckle, but the referee sees him do it, which allows, and as the ref is putting it back together, it allows Orange Cassidy to take another turnbuckle off and launch Trent into it, roll him up for the win. I thought this was good. A 3.5 is what I gave this. I enjoyed it enough. I thought it was good. I felt it could be hotter. But again, maybe they're keeping something in the chamber at the same time, right? Because this is not over. Because after the match, Trent goes after Orange Cassidy again. Beats him up some more on the floor. Pile drivers him on the stairs. And it was a little scary. Because as Trent was setting up the pile driver, like, I don't know, his foot slipped. Or he didn't have the leverage and I don't know if it slipped or it was a knowing move, but he put like his foot on, he put his foot like on the step of the stairs, and I was like, oh, I was afraid there. But Orange recovers, he gets a chair to fight him off, and then Don Callis comes in to sort of keep everyone separate. You got to keep them separated. And then Chris Statlander comes in to try and talk Trent down. So, you know, Don Callis, he's hanging out with Orange still. Statlander's there. She's trying to talk some sense into Trent as if, you know, he can be reclaimed from the dark side. Look, the elements are still there, but we're definitely establishing the fact that Orange Cassidy is being scouted by Don Callis. You get some footage from earlier in the day where the Young Bucks pull into the arena in a car and there's a cameraman in the back and they talk to the cameraman to make sure that we understand that it's not an invisible camera, but still nonetheless. See, this is another little thing where I'm like, Lasai, you know, it's like, it's inoffensive, but in itself, in its little bubble, it's inoffensive. But the more you get these things, the more it becomes accepted, and then you get to see more of it. If all of that makes sense. The ultimately, right? It doesn't matter, like I said. You know, it's not something that completely ruins everything, but it's like one of these things where I'm like, just be different, you know. Basically they pull into Tony Khan's reserved spot because he won't be using it because he won't be there today. This leads us to a video package recapping Kenny Omega last week, which cuts to Jack Perry cutting a promo on him. It's fine. Then we get back from commercial and Kenny Omega is in a hospital bed. He's in a hospital gown and he's cutting a promo. And, you know, basically says, I've got the EVP powers. He reminds us of all of that, you know. And he says, hey, you know, well, basically he books Anarchy at the Arena at for Double or Nothing. And it's going to be the Elite against an AEW team made up of FTR, which he calls the, you know, probably the greatest tag team of all time or something to that effect. You put them over hard. And two men who will reveal themselves later on this evening. So thank you for contacting us from your hospital bed, Kenny. Now, I don't know if this shoot means that he's going to have the operation because he said, you know, they're going to fix me up and whatnot. I don't know if this is all just another elaborate work, but either or, I'm still not convinced that Kenny Omega is not going to show up at some point and wrestle maybe sooner than we think. I don't know. What happened last week, you know, doesn't necessarily convince me that he's as far gone as indicated to us, the unwashed masses. Tony Schiavone does an on-stage interview with Serena Deeb. I really like those interviews. See, this is something that WWE does not do. And I think I talked about it a couple of weeks ago when they did it with Willow, and it was Renee and Willow, and it was tremendous, right? It just looked so good, and the crowd was into it. And so this is a little something that WWE does not do, that AEW does. And does it real well, and it looks good, and it looks different, and it feels different, and I can't put that over enough. I really can't. It really does feel like the old WWE interviews where they'd have, you know, Mean Gene on a riser somewhere in the audience or close to on the floor anyway, and his back would be turned to the audience, and any interview Hogan or Piper, whoever the fuck. It's a throwback to that, but it's something that WWE doesn't do, and it feels fresh. It feels new. This is a good thing. And he calls out Serena Deeb, Tony Schiavone does. I don't know if I mentioned that. I don't remember. I got too excited about talking about things that make me excited. But boy, oh boy, this promo did not get me excited. Man, again, I have to reiterate, I don't know who thought babyface Serena Deeb was a good idea, because it's not. She'd have a little difficulty with it because, you know, charisma is not her strong suit. Talking is not her strong suit. Wrestling is more. And her style of wrestling is much more apt to being used as heel offense than it is to babyface, where you have, as a babyface, you have these, you know, you have the explosive comebacks and you have to attract sympathy. And I don't think Deeb has that level of crowd connection. I think she's a wrestler. She goes in, she wrestles, she gets herself over by wrestling. Or at least that's how it happened. And you know, here, and even though, here's the, I'll tell you how this was a bad promo interview. I'll tell you why. And it might sound a little harsh, but she talked about having, you know, giving the reason why she was gone for 15 months, right? Which was the fact that she had seizures. She had three, what did she say? Unprovoked seizures. But I think what she meant is, you know, undiagnosed or unexpected. I mean, a seizure is always unexpected. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think unprovoked was the word. But that's not the point. That's another thing that people can dissect if they want. But the point is that she tells us she's had seizures over the past 15 months, which scared the shit out of her. And I can understand. you know, and they haven't even pinned down why they've been happening. And I can absolutely understand how scary and frightening of a situation it is, but she didn't get it over so that I could care about it. Like, I'm, you know what I mean? She's using a real life tragedy, which is fine, by the way. Pro wrestling, I don't give a shit. She's using a real life tragedy, or maybe tragedy is too big a word, but her real life medical condition, which has terrible impacts on her life, professional, personal. And she doesn't have the skill to generate real sympathy from the audience. And I think it's very telling. When Toni Storm comes in and she says, I don't give a single solitary shit about what happened to you. Her words. About any of the things she's been through. That's what she said. I don't give a single solitary shit about any of the things that you've been through. I'm like, me too? Like, which is not true. I don't give a... I do give a shit because as a human, I feel bad for her, and it's terrible. And I can't imagine having to live your life under that specter moving forward. I think it's awful. But in this terms of a story about trying to get yourself over, which is what pro wrestling is about, it didn't work, and I don't care. She managed to not make me really get invested. This would have been a perfect moment for Serena Deeb, super vulnerable, just pouring her heart out. But no, we got what we got, and it wasn't good, folks. It just wasn't good. It didn't work. And it's kind of sad. It's kind of sad, but it's also kind of telling, you know. And look, her match last week on Dynamite was not good. And this is the professor. This is someone who's supposed to be able to run circles around people, and that we've seen wrestle better than this. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, Deep knocks Toni Storm out cold with a punch. Let's move on. Rocky Romero is backstage chatting with Orange Cassidy in the trainer's room. Orange is all banged up. And he says if he beats Jay White tonight, he says the two, he and Orange, can get a third partner and make it a trios title match. And he pitches Tomohiro Ishii and Katsuyori Shibata, and then maybe even Trent, but that makes Orange Cassidy mad. Moving on. Mariah May defeated Harley Cameron. You know what? I didn't think this was that bad. I didn't think it was that bad a match, because my expectation was in the mud in regards to this. You know, I didn't think Harley Cameron was that bad. Now, this is where, you know, I'm not sitting here and telling you this is the Akira Hokuto coming back to us, you know, second incarnation of Minami Toyota. No. But I had extremely low expectations, and she rose above them. Fine. Mariah May, I think she's solid. It was fine. You know, Saraya gets involved in this one here, and she gets involved. Mariah May knocks her off the apron or something, or knocks her on the floor. I think she was on the floor. Saraya's not bumping off aprons for nothing. Let's just leave it at that. She knocks her down. Mariah May gets the win. Then after the match, Saraya attacks Mariah, beats her down. And then Mina Shirakawa runs in. Is she just hanging around in North America now? Like, is that all she's, like, she's flying in and out? Is this what, look, I'm not bitching, but this is a flight from Tokyo to, well, probably Vancouver, right? Which is easily a 11 hour affair. Flying from Tokyo to Vancouver, and then she has to fly into fucking Edmonton, which is probably like, I'd say under 2 hours, maybe an hour 45, you know, to come run in and drink champagne. And then what? She goes home? Like, what's going on? Like, Mina's not small potatoes in stardom. That's the thing. Like, if this was, you know, who was the stardom wrestler that stardom would always send? And everyone was like, oh, she's like bottom rung. I don't remember. But she's not a bottom rung wrestler. Like, it's Mina Shirakawa. She's, you know, she's a star in stardom. And she's always like fucking over here into North America. I don't have a problem with that. I'm just surprised. Because I like this, and I know that a lot of people listening to me are excited at the prospect of stardom and New Japan, AEW working together. So, there you go. She jumps into Mariah's arms and they tease kissing, but they don't. Probably last time the kiss was very impromptu, and they got a good finger wagging. You know. You gotta go, you shouldn't do that. They drank champagne though. And Shirakawa, look, again, assuming it was champagne, Shirakawa, she just downs that shit. She's like, glug, glug, glug. I'm like, really? Hey, dude, relax. It's fucking champagne. Take it easy, sport. Pack his bat stage. He says at the moment he's not concerned with Death Triangle. Then Bullet Club Gold show up. And Jay White says, yeah, you're not concerned with Death Triangle because they're dead. And Pac needs to be concerned about what happens next after you lost to Okada. By the way, I've defeated Okada. So maybe I should go after the Rainmaker. You know, great Jay White stuff. He says, but first things first, he's got to fight Rocky Romero. And Pac is looking very despondent. I think he's not accepting his losses well. He should be on a winning streak. I feel that's the story they're trying to tell here. House of Black promo on Adam Cope. That's fine. We get the Young Bucks then. There's a little reel for them, you know, a little montage. And then they're at gorilla position, and they send Swerve off to make his entrance. He hits the middle of the ring. He's supposed to have a face-off with Christian Cage, see? He says he's pissed off and in a fighting mood, and then throws to the Tonytron and says, because this is why I'm mad. And I'm like, again, it just a little something. Just a little something. A little thingy where I'm like, they show the Christian Cage taking him out last week, and with the patriarchy, of course. So Christian Cage comes out, he talks shit about the Oilers, who are playing after the show, right? After Dynamite, a lot of people got really, really worried. A lot of stuff going online. So everyone's leaving during Ring of Honor. Well, you came to see Dynamite. Ring of Honor is whatever. These people in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada want to see. They weren't going to stick around. for Ring of Honor. They're going to go watch the Oilers. What are we even doing here? Like, the don't be stupid. So basically he said, you know, Cage says, you know, the dread lock last week that he took, or at least Killswitch did, you know, he said that's mine. And every week I'm going to take something from you until I get what I really want. He, threatens to send the goons on him, but Swerve has his own goons as the Mogul Embassy run in, to flank Swerve. And Strickland gets he gets a nice little reference to the Kendrick and Drake elements in there. Here's a little aside, a little funny. Like, I'll tell you this. Swerve Strickland mentioning on screen, you know, making a reference to Drake and Kendrick Lamar, their beef that they had this weekend, which was very entertaining, even for someone who's not really into, you know, hip-hop culture. I thought it was a lot of fun. I'd like to... It's such wonderful, petty shit. I'm so into it. But him taking making that reference is much more... it makes a lot more sense and seems a lot more apropos than Shawn Michaels tweeting out this weekend, "Hey Drake, hey," you know, adding them both, saying, "You know, why don't you come settle this on NXT? I'll even mediate." Where that comes off as a "Hey fellow kids" type of situation, right? That's like me, honestly. It's like me doing that kind of shit. Old white guy tweeting about, you know, hip hop beef. Why don't you come on and do? But for Swerve to reference it makes perfect sense. I like it. He even says it wouldn't be the first time somebody from the West Coast whipped a deadbeat from Toronto. Talking about him and Christian Cage. I think that worked. That was fun. That was nice. Then he refers to Christian quitting, saying "I quit" against Adam Copeland. But suddenly the Mogul Embassy attack Swerve Strickland. Excuse me. They beat him down as Christian Cage smiles. That's the. And they powerbomb Swerve through the announce table. So, effectively speaking, I guess the Mogul Embassy is done. Unless, you know, what does Prince Nana have to say about all of this? Where are his allegiances? Well, if his allegiances are the money, well, you stick with the champ, right? Instead of the schmoes. Look. I have mixed feelings about this, and I don't know where I fall, because I feel it's not necessarily all that significant, but it is still significant. Here, this is where I fall on this situation. The state of the Mogul Embassy since Swerve started doing his own thing was a concern, was something that a lot of us were wondering, well, why is Brian Cage still acting like a heel if Swerve is a babyface? Can you have babyfaces and heels in the same faction, and so on and so forth? And of course, it makes more sense for a faction to be properly aligned. It's like, well, are they babyfaces? Are they heels? What are we doing here? And that clarifies the situation, right? It's like, no, the Mogul Embassy are still heels. They're very much heels. So that's fine. So on that end, like, yeah, it's fine. The one thing though that bothers me is that Swerve's push in AEW for as long as it as it's been, you know, or his build, let's not call it a push, his build has always been attached to him being the crown jewel of a group. You will often see this in pro wrestling, right? Where you have a group, you have a bunch of guys surrounding one guy that they're propping up as the main event star, the big guy, the big star. And they all, you know, and it, look, between you and me, it's something they usually do with white guys. So I thought when they did it with Swerve and they were giving him his own entourage, okay, that's something that they don't do much and they maintain right into his main event situation, right? Right into his main event push. So one could argue, oh, he's outgrown this. He doesn't need them anymore. But at the same time, him being a leader of a faction, of a group, of having, you know, his cronies or his whatever you want to call it, his associates, whatever you want to call them, it does add an extra layer of prestige, something a little something extra to him, you know? It's like when Bobby Lashley was doing the Hurt Business stuff, right? It legitimately adds to that person's persona, their aura. So I'm kind of bummed for those reasons that they're taking that away. Swerve could replace it with a bunch of other people, of course. You know, you could just like, you know, get some more, get other guys into the Mogul Embassy and or whatever he wants to call it moving forward. And, you know, he could have them feud with the remnants, with the former guys. And the guys that he brings in are much clearer baby faces, right? He could bring in just about, anyway, he could bring in younger guys. You know, he could bring in, you know, he could do Top Flight, whatever the fuck. It doesn't matter. But, you know, there's something here that I find is, it's taking away. And it's a very common thing that we've seen in the past when it comes to world champions, especially in other companies, that the baby faces stand alone. They don't have any friends, you know, they don't need run-ins and all this shit. They just, you know, they just do their own thing alone because of the alpha male thing. You all know what I'm talking about without me mentioning the name of the company. You know exactly what I'm talking about. I don't know. Now what? So what's is the deal here moving forward? That let's say. What in the lead up to Double or Nothing, Swerve is going to fight Brian Cage. Is he going to put the title on the line? A world championship match for Brian Cage on a Dynamite or a Collision? Like, who cares? You know, it's like at this point, I don't know. Like, I like the angle enough. It just, don't get me wrong. It's just the result is a mixed bag. But I think Swerve benefits from having an entourage. And I don't think it's necessarily a heel thing. I think he benefits from it. It's kind of a thing that made him special, right? I mean, we saw it with Hit Row. And we saw it... look, the only time it really didn't work was when he was with Parker, Boudreaux, and that former baseball player. And that was it, right? Anyway. Backstage, Christian Cage is with the Bucks and they congratulate Cage on the beatdown and Christian Cage says, oh, this is the start of a beautiful friendship, of a beautiful working relationship, excuse me. Willow Nightingale is interviewed backstage. Look, she's been giving the same promo in this feud for the past month, I think, at this point. You know, physically, she's not great. She's always in a good mood. She's ready, you know, she's ready for what comes next. And is Mercedes Moné ready? Because she's been on the shelf for a year and she respects her and she wishes she didn't get injured, but she's going to beat her. She's going to win. Like, it's literally the same thing she's been saying for weeks at this point. And look, since we're talking about it, Mercedes Moné, right? Let me skip through. Mercedes Moné had an interview backstage as well, which I thought was, I find people are, I think it's in vogue to sort of shit on Mercedes Moné's promos. They're not the greatest. We know this. Sasha Banks was never a great promo. I can't hammer this home every week, but this was not terrible. She's done worse on AEW. This here was not terrible. It's just people, I think, just like to tear it to shreds. I didn't think this was bad. But my point mostly is she's been having the same promo as well. As it stands right now, Willow and Mercedes have been saying the same things week after week after week without anything really developing, without there being anything really interesting being said. You know, Mercedes says, look, this week I'm going to be ringside for the Celtics game, I think she said, at various sporting events anyway. And then every day I'm at the gym and I lost a year of my career. Yes, we know. Like, at this point, we fucking know, everyone, Willow, Mercedes. And this is again, another little trope from that we're getting from WWE, where you're basically you send people out to talk, but they say the same shit week after week, and you're treading this, you're just walking in place, you're saying the same thing over and over. People call it storytelling, but there's no beats, there's nothing happening. I look, anyone can go back to any of my, back when I was doing Raw and SmackDown reviews myself, or over on Fightful, was the same thing. Keep talking about story beats. There's no story beats here. There's nothing happening. Right now, this feud is stale. There's nothing happening. They're just saying that they're reiterating the same stuff week after week. And I know they're technically supposed to both be baby faces. Moné needs to be a heel. And they need to make her a heel. Like, have a turn happen before getting into Double or Nothing. They really do. It would at least clarify roles and give Mercedes something to chew on. She is so much better as a heel than a babyface. It's starting to be a theme in this company. People being miscast. Could you imagine Willow Nightingale as a heel? And you felt for a while that's what they were going to do, right? With the missed bullshit with Sky Blue and then Julia Hart. And you're like, what are you doing? Anyway, Jay White defeated Rocky Romero. I think it was a fine little match. The final stretch was really good, which made it up to a 3.25 star to me. As opposed to, I was going for the gentleman's 3. But I thought the final stretch was really good. With Rocky Romero mounting the comeback. Landing a running sliced bread on Jay White as well. Brainbuster by Jay White. A fantastic brainbuster on top of that. And the Blade Runner gets the job done. Look, we want to talk about people who are miscast. Rocky Romero is not a good babyface. He is such a tremendous heel. He, like, in CMLL, he is incredible. He just does pristine heel work. As a babyface, Rocky's very vanilla. I'm sorry, he is. It's kind of boring. Anyway, after the match, Jay White and so on, they beat down on Rocky. Pac comes out. Bullet Club hit the bricks. So we're not quite done with the pack thing. I know that we're not getting the trio match, Rocky, Orange Cassidy, and another person. But, you know, at first this led me to believe that Pac would be the guy to be the third in the trio. Don't put Pac back in trios. Jesus Christ. Give him the singles run that... Give him the singles run that everyone is waiting for. I think everyone is ready for a Pac singles run. No one is going to bitch about a Pac singles run. No one is going to go online and say, why is this fool getting a push? No one. Especially not after the match he had with Okada at fucking Dynasty. Like, no one is going to sit around and bitch about it. We get a Samoa Joe training montage. God, he's a badass. Like, as far as a guy who, you know, it's always weird to talk about authenticity in pro wrestling, which is, if you know, effectively a sport of phonies, right? Of people pretending to fight, to hate each other, but in some cases they do, but bear with me here. Pretending to fight, pretending to hate each other, pretending to be like a tough guy and be into, you know, and liars. There are, you know, there's lots of lying in pro wrestling, as you know. It's so weird to talk about authenticity in this context. But nonetheless, authenticity is one of the best attributes that a wrestler can have to get themselves over. Eddie Kingston's entire wrestling career since he's been in AEW, but I mean, even before that, but his brand, I guess, in AEW is, you know, you can't get a realer guy. The same thing goes for Samoa Joe. You can't get realer than Samoa Joe, especially when you see him do these montages where you're like, Jesus Christ, this guy's tremendous. Big Bill and Chris Jericho defeated Harlan Abbott, who is a very well-known local star, and Mo Jabari. I really thought at first, I did do a double take. I'm not familiar with Mo Jabari. So when I saw his name, I thought his name was Mo Jabroni. And I thought that was, and I really double taked. I was like, what? That's tremendous. Oh, wait, it's not. I really thought it was Mo Jabroni. Like, if you're going to be, you know, I feel like it would have been a good, you know, enhancement talent name in the WWE, WWF, like back in the late 80s, early 90s. One guy, you know, Mo Jabroni or something, you know, might as well live the gimmick. Look, the match here was, it was essentially an enhancement match where Chris Jericho did a little bit at first, but Big Bill did most of the heavy lifting, and I have no issues with that. That was tremendous. They get the win. You know, Big Bill chokeslams both guys, then tags Jericho in so he can land the Judas effect, and score the win, whereas Big Bill could have ended the match himself, but he's under the learning tree. After the match, Jericho cuts a promo. He mistakes Edmonton for Calgary, which is a no-no. And he apologizes, but he's being so disingenuous. You know, let me get through this. He talks about how, you know, we haven't seen Hook since he hit himself in the face with a baseball bat. But he should take as much time as he needs to think about, you know, what he learned under the learning tree. Tony Schiavone jumps into the ring to announce to Jericho that Hook was going to be there on Wednesday next week. And Jericho's sort of taken aback, but not in that comical, over-the-top pro wrestling thing where it's more like you can just see it wash over him, but then he reclaims himself as a, you know, as the disingenuous piece of shit that he is right now. This is, oh, no, okay, that's great. You know, well, then we'll celebrate all together next week. Look, a lot of people were jumping off the Jericho train And I myself was here saying, you know, maybe old Christopher needs a little couple of months off. And look, he's been great. He's been great. He's back to being great. He's doing what he does best. And Big Bill might benefit from this more than you imagine. I think he's going to be on TV a lot. This is actually very good. This is actually very good. And I won't hear the opposite. Because I think the opposite boils down to, I do not like Chris Jericho, which again is absolutely fair. But objectively, this work is tremendous. But you can be shrouded by your feelings for Chris Jericho. That's okay. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you this sucks, because it doesn't. It's great. It's good, good, good stuff. You want to know what's great, though? What's legitimately great? What's really, really great? Adam Copeland defeating Brody King to retain the TNT title in a no DQ match. God, this match ruled. This match absolutely fucking ruled. They're fighting. It's physical real early. We're getting reverse. Brody King does a reverse neck breaker off the apron against the ropes, the neck, etc., etc. Chairs come into play. Copeland starts using him, and he just wails. He just goes right forward. See, this, you're not going to buy Adam Copeland being a soft baby face where, oh, no, I'm not going to use the weapons really in full force. You're not going to buy it because it's fucking Edge, you know, who has done this multiple times. His signature move with his buddy was the Concerto, the TLC match. Like, this is a guy where you're like, yeah, this absolutely makes sense that Cope does this. DDT on a chair and on the apron, and Brody King blades like a work of art. There is no better bleeder in pro wrestling than our boy Brody King. I even had people in my Discord last night. Check it out. Light link is in the description. We'd love to have you. I even had people in my Discord last night going, wait, did he like just use a packet of paint or no? And I'm surprised. This is not the first time Brody King bleeds in AEW. We know this. But yeah, so it shouldn't come to a surprise to I think it can still be surprising when it happens because it's so dramatic, because of the amount of blood, and it, like people were saying, it looks so thick and it's dripping off like fucking maple syrup, you know? But we shouldn't question, is what I'm saying, whether Brody King is bleeding or not, because yes, he does. They're beating each other up. It's so physical. Stuff pile driver by King on Copeland. DVD on the apron by Copeland, who fights back, and then spears right through the ropes. Brody King right off the apron through table on the floor. And a spear in the ring gets the win. I thought this match was violent. It was brutal. It was attrition. I am very high on this match. 4.5 stars. This really convinced me that, elevated the show for me, where I'm like, oh yeah, okay, now we're getting into it. And Adam Copeland, look, Brody rules. And it's just a basic, it's just a basic law of nature. Brody King is tremendous at pro wrestling. That's just fundamental. And then you have, Adam Copeland, who is continuing on this tremendous run. Like, you know, he was saying, what was he saying in an interview the other day, about a week ago or so? He said, I want to do a new move every time I wrestle in AEW. I want to try out something new. You know, there he is, just like getting the shit beat out of him. That's a new move. He doesn't need new moves. This, and he works hard. I get The stench of the buddy match last week is completely washed away. That this match was absolutely tremendous. Speaking of Buddy, Brody King attacks Copeland after the match. Kyle O'Reilly comes into the save. Whew. I'm very, very high on this. I thought it was, I think it's one of the best AEW matches we'll see this year on TV, on Dynamite. One of the best Dynamite matches we'll see this year. Absolutely tremendous. After the match, we talked about that, but then we go backstage. Well, then, like, if we're going in order, then we get the Mercedes Moné promo, which we already talked about. And then after, Copeland is with Kyle O'Reilly backstage, and they're getting interviewed, and Copeland thanks Kyle O'Reilly, and Kyle O'Reilly says, "You're welcome, why don't you give me a title shot?" And in my hometown next week of Vancouver, and Edge is like, "Aha, I see what you did there, kid," you know. So we're getting Adam Copeland versus Kyle O'Reilly next week. Now, if Adam Copeland wants to bust out a new move next week, he's got the guy to do it. I can't believe that I'm sitting here and I'm saying, I look forward to Adam Copeland matches now. Where I was completely bored out of my skull with him in WWE. And where I had so many apprehensions of him coming into AEW. But this is a guy who has adopted the style, understood the beat, a guy who understands fucking pro wrestling, who knows that you can't come in and do the shtick you were doing in the other place over here. Probably had a good chat with his buddy Christian, who is another guy who figured that out. I'd say I got nothing bad to say about this run. Work-wise, quality-wise, it's been amazing. He's been great. And then we get the main event angle where the Elite arrive and they talk about the Open. Because this, I think, started like at 11 p.m. I'm like, Jesus Christ, are we getting a 30-minute overrun? or is this going to be like cut down to 2 minutes? Is this going to be like the speediest segment of all time? The Young Bucks come out and address it. It's like, no, we got an overrun. It doesn't end until the Young Bucks say it's over, you know, kind of thing. Okada gets on the mic and he says, "Hey, Kenny, I'm the best bout machine," or something. What does he say? He says, "Get well soon." Shit heel. Kazuchika Okada. Matthew says Tony Khan is the best boss he ever worked for, and he wishes he had got out of his own way, that they're making AEW a better place. Nicholas officially accepts the challenge for Anarchy in the Arena. FTR show up. Dax Harwood chats a bit, and he introduces the two partners, who are going to be Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon. Two big fan favorites. When Eddie came out, big reactions from the crowd. When Danielson came out, big reactions from the crowd. Look, and then they get into the ring, they face off, and then they start pummeling at each other. Despite the fact that Matthew was like, "Don't do it," or whatever he was babbling on about.
You want a big time Anarchy in the Arena with these guys here? Look, there's no Moxley, there's no Omega, there's no, you know, at the very least you slide in two components of previous successful Anarchy in the Arenas. This is going to be the third, right? I've loved both matches. I think both matches made my match of the year lists over the past 2 years. And I think, look, Danielson and Eddie in this are perfect additions. It's going to be so good. I already saw, you know, heard people going, what do you mean Eddie and Danielson, they just hated each other? No, they shook each other's hand. They showed respect. Danielson's ready to move on. And here's a, and what you have in this situation here, when you look at this, when you look at the people assembled, you have a fantastic combination of sickos. You have a majority of wrestling sickos in this match that are going to make this match really fun for sickos like myself. Like the Jacksons, FTR, Danielson, Eddie Kingston. Like, absolute sickos. Now, you've got two, I don't even want to say outliers, two others who might just turn out to be sickos. You've got Jack Perry in here who has something to prove, right? He's got something to prove to himself and to the audience, to the fans, to his boss. He's not going to go soft. He's going to use real glass in this. Oh, there is going to be real glass. And we're going to wink, wink, nudge, nudge pretty hard. And then you have Kazuchika Okada, who never does this kind of shit. Okada's like the pure wrestler, right? He's not used to this type of environment. How is he going to perform? Look, I'll tell you this. Since he came into AEW, he feels rejuvenated and refreshed. It really does feel like everything that he's been doing in AEW for the past, since he joined, has makes him feel good, makes him feel reignited. Like, not that he's got something to prove, but that he's doing something different and he's enjoying it, so he's giving it his all. I think that same energy is going to translate here. Kazuchika Okada in a wild, historically violent, false count. Isn't it false count anywhere? It's no disqualifications, whatever. I don't remember the rules. It doesn't matter. In this context here, it's going to be a fascinating match for that. But it's supported by six guys who are just, who love the business, who breathe the business, who are not afraid to put their bodies in peril for it. How can you not be excited for this? That's your selling point. That's the match. I'm excited for it. So there you go. That's the show. I thought it was good. Like, again, like, you know, despite my initial ramblings about how I felt things were going, you know, that I didn't want, you know, it, I think the show nonetheless is good. And it was carried by an absolutely tremendous go out of your way to watch match between Copeland and Brody King. I like the opener, but like, there's nothing really else on the match-wise where I'm like, yeah, you have to go see this. You have to see this. They're advancing stories. They're moving things forward. I don't know. I thought it was pretty good. More stories, more advancements, but we'll see. We'll see for the rest. We're gonna wrap it up for today. Thank you very much for joining me, for taking in my thoughts on May 8th edition of Dynamite. If you liked it, like, subscribe here on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, or leave some 5-star reviews and 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts and Spotify if you're listening to this on the audio side of things. Appreciate it a great deal. I will be back Tuesday for another edition of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Thank you all very much. I'll see you next time.